We're starting today's show in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
A lot of people talk about Minneapolis and actually Minnesota as being welcoming places. Do you think so?
No, I think we have this idea of Minnesota nice.
This is Jessica Lopez Lyman. She's a professor of Chicano studies and a resident of South Minneapolis, a neighborhood that's pretty diverse with a lot of Latinos and Somalis, and also a lot of young artsy types. And Minnesota nice, she says,
really comes from this Scandinavian tradition where in Scandinavian culture, you're not supposed to stand out a lot.
According to Wikipedia, Minnesota nice is the stereotypical behavior of people from Minnesota. To be courteous, reserved, family-focused, and mild-mannered.
Gee whiskers, Bobby, this Robo-Mom is the A-plus best.
I just love St. Paul pork products. In fact, I love
them so much. Can I come in?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of...
Oh, yeah. You betcha.
You get the idea.
So Minnesota nice comes out of this historical trajectory, and folks that like Minnesota nice say, oh, we're really friendly, people are smiley. But a lot of folks of color and Native folks will tell you Minnesota nice is passive-aggressive racism. And so while somebody might smile in your face, they are not going to confront you because mainstream culture here doesn't like confrontation. And so instead, they'll smile and then behind your back really say how they feel.
Minnesota might be famous for being non-confrontational, but here in this diverse slice of South Minneapolis, people are throwing Minnesota nice out the window, especially when it comes to politics. And one example is something that happened earlier this year. You see, the Democratic Party in Minnesota has a policy that says there should be an equal number of male and female delegates chosen at the caucuses.
And so what ended up happening is people pushed back and said, no, why is gender being man or woman in a binary? What about gender queer or gender nonconforming?
What about race or ethnicity? Why isn't that a factor in choosing delegates?
What ended up happening in our precinct is that we lined people up according to their identity politics. We encouraged at first and then challenged white men to step back and not be a delegate or be an alternate. People are taking their power, and it's really beautiful to see.
Identity politics. You might have noticed that Jessica just used those words, and it's a complicated term. But to simplify it, identity politics is what happens when your identity drives your politics. Meaning, when the people you vote for, the bills you support, the general political choices that you make are shaped by your race, your gender, your sexual identity, and so on. This has been a hot topic of conversation. In the wake of President Trump's election, a controversial New York Times editorial suggested that Democrats will continue to lose elections if they keep on focusing on appeals to specific identity groups, like Latinos or African Americans. In part, they said, because they'll continue to alienate white voters. But there's also the idea that Democrats should push harder and focus more on marginalized groups. And others have been saying that it's the Republicans who have been playing the identity politics game by overtly appealing to white anxiety and white fear.
White identity politics has always been available for exploitation in the political mainstream. It's just that until Trump, mainstream politicians didn't go there. Or if they did, they pretended they were doing something else.
So on this show, we're going to tackle some of these questions. And we're going to look at some stories about how race and identity are right at the top of the conversation, including how one Latino man in California has become an active part of the so-called alt-right movement. For now, though, we're going to stay in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and zoom into one local city council race. I'm joined now by my traveling buddy and Latino USA producer, Marlon Bishop, who reported this story with me in Minnesota earlier this year. It was a great trip, Marlon.
Yeah, first time in Minnesota.
Okay, so give us a little context, because Minneapolis, like, it's a very particular place.
Yeah, I mean, Minneapolis is among the most liberal cities in the country. So, you know, the political fights that happen here aren't Democrat versus Republican. They're not liberal versus conservative. They're between what you might call a mainstream left and the progressive, or some might say radical left.
Right. So the election that we're looking at is for a seat on the Minneapolis City Council in Ward 9 specifically, one of the most progressive districts in this very progressive city.
And it was essentially a race between three candidates.
Alondra Cano, Mohamed Farah, and Gary Schiff. And we heard a lot of jokes that this race was like a Trump supporter's worst nightmare because the three candidates were a Mexican Latina, a Muslim Somali, and a gay white man.
So while we were in the Twin Cities, we met with each of these candidates who were all basically neck and neck in this race.
Let's start with Alondra Cano. At the time, she was running for re-election.
Do you consider yourself Minnesota Nice?
I don't know if I'm Minnesota Nice.
Alondra is 36 years old. She's the child of Mexican immigrants. After college, she became an immigrant rights organizer. And then in 2013, she decided, essentially on a whim, to run for office. And she's definitely on the more progressive, radical side of the political spectrum.
The type of political work that I do is not Minnesota Nice.
As a city council member for the last 4 years, she's been a vocal supporter of Black Lives Matter, of the protests at Standing Rock, of increasing the minimum wage. She also holds some more controversial opinions, such as saying she could imagine a Minneapolis without a police force.
I think that if you are not changing a conversation, if you're not getting in trouble, you're not pushing hard enough.
And Alondra has been getting in trouble. The local press, they criticize her a lot.
You know, stereotypically casting me as the angry woman of color, talking about how I'm always late for meetings, talking about how I can't pronounce things right.
That was Alondra. And now on to candidate number two.
His name is Mohamed Farah.
Like, his headquarters are literally right across the street from Mercado Central.
We met Mohamed Farah in his campaign office, a spare room with a big map of Ward 9 on the wall, covered in red pushpins.
Mohamed runs a small nonprofit that works with the Somali community.
And I decided to run for the city council because if you look at different levels of government, city council is the closest governing body to the public, and they have so much power in terms of our quality of life.
His base is Somali-American, like him, but Mohamed also has other supporters, including people in the business community. And he talks a lot about wanting to reduce crime in the neighborhood.
While we were in Minnesota reporting this story, we heard some people say that he might not be as supportive of the LGBT community as Alondra is, for example. But Mohamed says that's nonsense.
I will fight for a member of that community the same way that I will fight for a Latino member of our community. And the fact that, you know, folks think that there's differences between these communities, there's none. I mean, we're living together and we're working together and we're fighting alongside with each other.
And last but not least, candidate number three.
Gary Schiff, candidate for 9th Ward City Council.
Gary is in his 40s. He's white. He's gay. And he got his political start in activism around the AIDS crisis.
Where in the political spectrum do you kind of define yourself if you had to?
Always been viewed as very liberal, progressive.
And he actually formerly held the very seat he's running for, the seat Alondra Cano currently has. He served 3 terms on the council, then ran for mayor, but dropped out after doing poorly in the caucus, and took a break from politics to work in nonprofits.
So now, 4 years later, he's trying to get the seat back. And his message is basically that he's the candidate who knows how city government works and knows how to get things done.
My story is that of a protester who became policymaker and works with other grassroots emerging movements to take that agenda and pass it into legislation.
All 3 of the candidates you just met, by the way, are Democrats. But Minneapolis elections are not like other cities because anyone can run in the general election, regardless of party. So that's how you end up with 3 Democrats running against each other in this election.
And so in February, a few months before the caucuses, something happened. So there was a letter written to you. You know what I'm talking about.
I thought this was super interesting.
I bet you did.
Would you be willing to read
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Those are not my words.
The letter was posted on Facebook, and it was titled, An Open Letter to Gary Schiff. And it read,
Gary, first, you might not know it, but this is a love letter. A letter of hope, in a way that hope lives in the places where we hold each other accountable. Ask the hard questions, and tell the truth about disappointment. So I'm writing this letter to you because I am disappointed.
The letter was written by a woman named Susan Raffo, an old friend of Gary's from the queer activism scene in Minneapolis. And by the way, that's not Susan you were hearing. That was a voiceover.
You are a white man running for elected office at a moment of intense division in this country, particularly around race and white supremacy. You are choosing to put yourself forward against a Latina, an immigrant.
Susan was motivated to write that letter after seeing language that said that Gary was, quote, running for his old seat in Ward 9.
When I read the phrase, running for his old seat in Ward 9, I hear echoes of Make America Great Again.
The letter goes on quite a bit longer, but in the end, it's a call for him to use his white privilege to support a person of color on the ticket. But for better or worse, a lot of people read the letter as, you shouldn't run for office because you're white. What was your reaction to that?
Well,
we didn't respond in a campaign sense. It's an opinion, and it's one that's not broadly shared. And I think a lot of people see that connection, comparing me to Donald Trump, as just being what do I want to say? It's such a stretch to and knee jerk to say, well, let's just call him Trump and that's how we'll define him. I was elected three times, each time with margins of 2-1. I don't think this district thinks that they elected a white supremacist three times to office.
When I saw Gary was running, I just felt the frustration of, like, let's give her more time.
This is Susan Raffo, the author of the letter, who we should point out is herself white.
As we mentioned, a lot of people read the letter as saying, basically, as a white person, Gary, you should think twice about running for this seat. And Susan told me, yes, that's part of it.
Absolutely. And there's any unequal distribution of power, then in order for that power to become more inclusive, some folks who've held it for a while have to step back so that there's space for others to step in.
But she says she was trying to make a bigger point about the essential unfairness of the U.S. political process.
And I think the nuance sometimes in U.S. conversations about race, particularly when white people are responding to conversations about white racism and white supremacy, the nuance can get lost in the reactivity of, you're telling me I'm not allowed to have my own life.
City Pages, the Twin Cities alt weekly, ran an article about the letter, headlined Minneapolis candidate Gary Schiff, white guy, called out for sins of pigmentation.
So, of course, there was blowback.
The letter also got picked up by some right-wing news sites and posted on white supremacist blogs.
I received death threats, you stupid person, all that stuff.
Some of those people saw the letter as an example of anti-white attitudes that exist on the left.
But many on the left did, in fact, agree with Susan's more nuanced point. Basically, that the best way to be a white ally is to give up some power and let someone else have it. I asked Gary about that idea.
I'm just curious how you've wrestled with that question of, like, do you think there's something to the idea that as white people, we should cede the space?
I think everybody should participate in politics, and I'm never going to change that.
So we left Minneapolis, and as election day got closer, as often happens, things got a little nasty.
There were billboards and mailers against some of the candidates. A shady super PAC got in the mix. And there was even a controversy about donations from a strip club magnate. The Minneapolis Star Tribune went against the Democratic Party, which was behind Alondra, and endorsed Gary Schiff instead.
And so, with just a few days to go, it was still looking like a toss-up. And then election day came, and what happened, Marlon?
Alondra Cano won. And by a pretty big margin. She actually received 60% of the final count.
Which makes it seem like her brand of progressive left politics is what the people of the Ninth Ward wanted.
Yeah, you know, it would seem that way. And across Minneapolis, center-left candidates lost big time to candidates who are on the progressive left. There were two progressives who were trans POC candidates. They won seats on the council. So we saw this trend replicated in many parts of the country in these recent elections, right? Where young progressives of color were beating establishment candidates.
Right, which is really kind of showing that there's something else that's happening in these like progressive left cities that is really, really different than what's happening on the national scale. And that, in fact, in a lot of these places, race and identity actually matter a lot to voters right now.
It matters to Jessica Lopez Lyman, the Chicano studies professor we heard from earlier.
I think that Gary, it's not specifically about Gary, but that Gary represents a white man. He's, you know, queer, so there's multiple identities that he carries, but ultimately he represents kind of the old guard.
And Jessica's the kind of person for whom the letter to Gary made sense.
You know, why now, Gary? Why try to rerun for a seat that you had stepped down from, and now Councilmember Cano is there? And a lot of folks are talking about this idea that white middle-class homeowners in Ward 9 are very upset about the changing demographics, about the change in power structures, people of color coming to the table and having more important roles.
So there's this notion that Susan puts out in her letter, which is essentially that as a white person, you should step back and consider supporting the POC candidate instead of running yourself. I mean, that is obviously controversial. But in 2017, what surprised me the most about this trip is that this is actually happening in a city like Minneapolis. These conversations around identity and race and privilege, they're very vibrant. They're going to come up. But you know what? These conversations might not always be Minnesota nice. Thanks to Marlon Bishop for producing that story.